Good evening, Truth Seekers. Welcome to another round of lighthearted fun and frivolity here on the Malloy Program. Thanks for tuning in. So, how was your Tuesday? Is it hot where you are? What was it, 101 degrees in Detroit? The drought situation, of course, in this country is getting worse and worse and worse. But everybody knew this was going to happen. I mean, the scientists have been talking about this for about 30 years now. But, of course, it's not really happening. It's just all in your imagination. So don't let it bother you. Just carry on. This hour is being sponsored by Gray Brechen, or Brechen. What is it, Brechen? And Gray's message, you know that beautiful old building downtown where you go to do business and where you run into your neighbors? It's the one with the American flag and maybe a mural painted by an artist to help get us out of the last depression. It's often the best-built building in town, and it stands for government at its best and most honest. That may be why it has to go. It's your post office. And if it's not for sale, it probably soon will be. To find out more about one of the great public land thefts of our time, go to SaveThePostOffice.com. There you can find out who is on the current Board of Governors and why they have a lot less interest in providing public service than they do in selling public assets, yours. And you can see some very cool buildings going up for sale every week. SaveThePostOffice.com. Save the Post Office. Yeah, I know in Chicago and a couple of the boroughs in New York City. Where else have I seen? I think Baltimore. The murals that were painted through WPA-granted funds, murals painted by artists, yeah, back during the Depression. There were stipends for artists, musicians, poets, writers. Can you imagine such a thing? Everybody knows Jim DeMint, the Republican senator from South Carolina, who is, by any yardstick, just a total creep. There's no other way to put it. DeMint is just a total creep. Remember how many times we've talked on this program about how Republicans only appreciate soldiers when they're dead. Republicans do not want soldiers coming back to parades and flags and, you know, all that fol-de-rol. Because the next thing you know, here they come, go to the VA, they want money for this and money for that. To a Republican office holder, the only good soldier is a dead soldier. Veterans who come back from fighting the corporate wars for corporate America are just a massive pain in the ass to Republicans. They don't like them. They don't want anything to do with them. They're a drain on that part of the economy that could be going for more tax breaks for the wealthy. Jim DeMint is at the top of the heap in hating live veterans. He despises them. How has he shown this most recently? Well, little background. We've talked about this before. It's up front again from McClatchy newspapers. Thousands of sick Marine veterans and their families maybe on the verge of taking a giant leap toward receiving health care for illnesses that they suffered from decades of water contamination at Marines base camp or Marines base, Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. Now, there has been legislation to help these guys out, these women out, but it sat there for years in the Senate. And it was expected to be voted on in the full Senate this week under one of the few bipartisan deals between Democrats and Republicans in the past, what, 6 or 7 years. But Jim DeMint has raised his ugly goddamn face and blocked the bill. He says he worries about fraud. His position has developed into an intra-party standoff with Republican Senator Richard Burr of North Carolina. That's the Senate bill's lead sponsor. Senator Richard Burr, Republican of North Carolina, led the call to help the Marines and their families. In an April letter to Barack Obama asking for additional funds to provide care for victims, leaders of the House and Senate Veterans Affairs Committee called the episode, quote, possibly the worst example of water contamination in our nation's history, end quote. The worst example of water contamination in our nation's history. Up to a million people at Camp Lejeune may have been exposed to drinking water that was poisoned with trichloroethylene, tetrachloroethylene, benzene, and vinyl chloride. These chemicals are directly linked, and the contamination is directly linked to birth defects, childhood leukemia, and a variety of other cancers. Remember, to Republicans, the only good soldier is one who leaves the country fully armed and comes back dead. If they come back alive, well, there's all these goddamn issues, you know, Veterans Affairs, PTSD, what's that? And now this? Well, Jim DeMint is going to take care of that, right? Last month, the House and Senate Veterans Affairs Committee agreed on a bill that would provide health care for people who lived or worked at the Marine Corps base from January 1, 1957 through December 31st, 1987. 30 years. It would provide health care to military personnel and their family members, provided they lived or worked at least 30 days on the base. 30 days. 30 days exposure to this. The bill could impact up to 750,000 Marine veterans and family members. Now, this bill is part of a large, multifaceted bill that includes dozens of additional provisions, including expanding health care benefits for disabled veterans, reauthorizing programs to help homeless veterans, and improving the processing of claims when these former soldiers do file the claims. But Jim DeMint will have none of this. Oh, no. Oh, no. Last Wednesday, Senator Patty Murray, Democrat from Washington who supports the agreement and who is chairwoman of the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee, or coming up tomorrow, I should say, on Wednesday, tomorrow, she's expected to bring the measure to the floor and seek to pass the bill via a unanimous consent vote. But Jim DeMint is expected to take the Senate floor and address concerns he has about deceptive practices. DeMint has put a procedural hold on the bill, which means it goes nowhere, saying there are not enough safeguards to prevent fraud by those whose illnesses were not due to water contamination. Now, of course, all of this is everything that DeMint is trying to do shows two things: his utter contempt and disgust toward the nation's veterans, A. B, it's a fraudulent argument. And I'll tell you why when we come back. There are safeguards already in place to prevent this from happening, this so-called fraud that DeMint is worried about. Stay with us.
preserve your memories. They're all that's left you.
Redefining anger management. Back to Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. So, South Carolina Senator Jim DeMint, Republican monster, has decided that Marines, ex-Marines, former Marines, cheat and lie and engage in deceptive practices in order to steal a few dollars that DeMint feels should go to his wealthy patrons in the form of further tax breaks. That's what DeMint is saying. He is saying that even though Republicans and Democrats in the Senate, and the last time something like this happened, a star appeared in the East, Republicans and Democrats in the Senate have decided to act like adults for a change, just temporarily, and pass this legislation that will provide health care to people, Marines and their families, and their genomes, and their ovaries and testicles, and their babies, born, unborn, and still residing separately in mom and dad, compensation for having been exposed to some of the most vile chemicals, having been exposed to it, they drank it. DeMint says no. DeMint is saying that there should be added to the bill anti-fraud language. DeMint is afraid that these Marines are going to lie, cheat, steal, and defraud the country. Now, if you are a former Marine, or if you're an active duty Marine, and you're just proud as punch of the fact that you've always voted Republican, and your mom and daddy did, and your grandparents did, and your cousins vote Republican, let me ask you something. What the hell is wrong with you? This is what you're voting for. So now Jim DeMint wants to say to you, and some of these people are in their 70s and 80s by now, and are suffering from what they drank at Camp Lejeune 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. And DeMint is saying, to hell with you. Go die. Quit interfering with the budget process. I've got to do more tax breaks for my owners. There is already law with respect to fraud where it concerns veterans' benefits. If DeMint doesn't know this, then God damn him. But he does know it. He knows this. What he is doing is displaying his utter contempt and hatred for, in this case, the families, the survivors, and the former Marines who are suffering from drinking tetrachloroethylene, benzene, vinyl chloride, trichloroethylene, cancer-causing, leukemia-causing, sterility-causing chemicals that was in the drinking water. How does anybody who has ever had a family member in any branch of the military ever vote Republican? Do you not understand? I mean, God, oh, what's the use? What's the use? Nah, I'm not going to get into it. You go ahead and vote Republican. You people who are in uniform, or you families who have had family members in the United States military, go ahead. In the first place, you're being sent, or your family member's being sent to fight, kill, and die for corporate America. You're not defending freedom. Come on, wake up. Smell the napalm. What the hell is wrong? What's wrong with your just understanding what the mission is? Whose freedom were you defending in Iraq? Whose freedom are you defending in Afghanistan? But if you have to buy into that, can you not see what happens to veterans when they come back? Can you not see what Republican Senator Jim DeMint is saying about families, innocent people who gave a father, a son, a daughter, a cousin, a brother, an uncle into the military? And because they lived on base, they got deathly ill, they had cancer, they got all kinds of diseases, and now this goddamn Jim DeMint is saying, tough! No money for you! And you're still going to vote Republican, aren't you? You're still going to do it. Like I say, what's the use? Oh, well. We'll be back.
Truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This hour is sponsored by Gray Brecken and Gray's Message. You know that beautiful old building downtown where you go to do business and where you run into your neighbors? It's the one with the American flag and maybe a mural painted by an artist to help get us out of the last depression. It's often the best built building in town, and it stands for government at its best and most honest. That may be why it has to go. It's your post office. And if it's not for sale, it probably soon will be. To find out more about one of the great public land thefts of our time, go to SaveThePostOffice.com. You can find out there who is on the current Board of Governors and why they have a lot less interest in providing public service than they do in selling public assets. Yours. And you can see some very cool buildings going up for sale every week. SaveThePostOffice.com. It's hard to... hard for me in my little tiny world to understand with the kind of disrespect and contempt that every single Republican office holder... including this Turkey McCain, to George Bush, all of them. The incredible contempt and disrespect that they show to people who have done what corporate America told them to do. Went and bombed and burned and shot, stabbed and killed, and been burned and bombed and stabbed and killed in return. And the ones that do make it back, either partially or wholly, Republicans just urinate all over them. It's just astonishing to me that this goes on. And yet, the conventional wisdom is that it is the Republican Party that is pro-military. It is not, goddammit. The Republican Party is pro-military industrial complex. The Republican Party gives away billions, tens of billions, hundreds of billions to the military-industrial complex because so many Republicans are owned outright by that death business. The Republicans don't give a goddamn about the soldiers. The ones they care about are the capitalists and the corporatists who run the death machine production. So to you former Marines out there and your families, Jim DeMint says, shut up and go die. What are you going to do about it? Yeah, come November, you're going to vote Republican again. I know. Has any other war president ever said caca like this? George Bush, George W. Bush. This is what he said in a new interview with the Hoover Institute's Peter Robinson. The interview is online if you want to go look at it. Hey, yours is awesome, and I was famous, and I was powerful. But I have no desire for fame and power anymore. 8 years was awesome. I was famous, and I was powerful. He was famous, and he was powerful. He was so powerful that roughly 2.5 million people in the Middle East and Americans are dead because of this rancid bastard's sense of power and his sense of fame. I'm a war president. I had to trifecta. I'm a war president. I'm going to invade a country. I'm going to invade. I'm going to invade a country. My dad invaded a country, and he didn't go far enough. I'm going to invade a country, and Dick Cheney's going to help me. I'm going to invade a country, and we're going to take all their oil. I was famous, and I had a lot of power. Have you ever heard a president talk that way? This filthy, murderous son of a bitch, the perennial college cheerleader. No offense to college cheerleaders, but dear God, this guy's more like a seventh grader. I was powerful. I was famous. I was president. I was war president. Yeah, had to go to war. Had to get what's his name? I forget his name. Bush is out promoting a book on economic growth. It's called The 4% Solution, Unleashing the Economic Growth America Needs. It's not written by him. It's put out by the George W. Bush Institute. This son of a bitch belongs in an institute, in an institution. Now, apparently, Bush is being credited for writing the foreword to the book. Right. Of course he did. In the interview, Bush also revealed that he's a fan of the iPad. I'm famous. I was famous. And I had a lot of power. And you know how many people I killed? God damn. You know how many people I killed? Laura only killed one. I killed 3 million. I killed 3 million people. Hey, Laura! You only killed one. I killed 3 million people. 3 million I killed. Yeah. That's powerful. He said he's a fan of the iPad. When asked what books were on his book stand or nightstand, Bush said, "We don't have book stands anymore. We got iPads. Please." Jesus, God. Laura only killed one. I killed almost 3 million people. You know that? I sent 3 million people to their Muslim hell, and I sent a whole bunch of American soldiers up to see Jesus. You know that? Yeah. Well, I don't know how many of them were Christian, but if they weren't, they're in hell with Andy now. I was famous. I was powerful. I was war president. Ah, damn, man. Woo! Woo! Man. I let bombs go and stuff. Has any other war president ever said anything like this? Can you see Barack Obama 4 years from now? Yeah. We got Osama bin Laden. We filled him full of holes. Yeah, I was watching it on real-time Instacam. Yep, me and Hillary. We were sitting there, and other people in the room. It was something, man. Yeah. Those slugs went right into him. Had to knock off his old lady first, but wow, man, just like a video game. Can you imagine Barack Obama doing that? Huh? Can you imagine Harry Truman? Well, yes, we did. We dropped a bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. We did, and we incinerated, let me see here, I guess on the first day, we incinerated about 250,000 people. It was really something, huh? You could see their little bodies all crisped up like that, all black and charred up, and damn, there was nothing left standing. It was, it looked like downtown Kansas City. There's just nothing left. Yeah, I was a war president. You know, I didn't want to be, but, you know, Roosevelt died, and I had to take over, and so I ordered that bomb to be dropped. I did. It was, man, it was great fun. I watched that mushroom cloud go up. Woo! Baby, that was something. Can you imagine a president of the United States talking like George W. Bush? I was famous. I was powerful. I loved it. Is this a sick country or what? Can you? Oh my God! I was a war president. Right before airtime, I got something here from Sheila Samples, who is the one of the honchos over at Op-Ed News Online, and. It's an article here I'll share with you when we come back from Christian Science Monitor. The Pentagon is warning the citizens of this country that we may face IEDs here at home. Huh? Well, there's only one thing to do then, and that is to deploy drones in American skies, right? In case it can be determined that those people beside the road who look like they're changing a tire are not really changing a tire. They're putting together an IED out there on I-75 or I-35 or I-65 or I-10 or I-5. That's really, they're putting together an IED. Quick, call in it. Oh, sorry. Just an American family that had a flat tire. Oh, look at that. Their car is still burning. Oh, those are bodies? Oh, man. Well, that's a shame, but, you know, we have to defend freedom, justice, and the American way. So that's what's coming next to the United States. Huh?
You might say I'm unlearned, but there's a one thing I know. I'm younger than you. Even Jesus would never forgive what you do. Let me ask you one question. Is your money that good? Will it buy you forgiveness? Do you think that it could? I think you will find, when your death takes its toll.
Real estate here in my bag. So we bought a pack of cigarettes and...
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Gray Brecken. And Gray's message is this. You know that beautiful old building downtown where you go to do business and where you run into your neighbors? It's the one with the American flag and maybe a mural painted by an artist to help get us out of the last depression. It's often the best built building in town, and it stands for government at its best and most honest. That may be why it has to go. It's your post office. And if it's not for sale, it probably soon will be. To find out more about one of the great public land thefts of our time, go to SaveThePostOffice.com. You can find out there who is on the current Board of Governors, the Postal Board of Governors, and why they have a lot less interest in providing public service than they do in selling public assets, yours. And you can see some very cool buildings going up for sale every week. SaveThePostOffice.com. Thank you, Gray. IEDs. As the, according to the Christian Science Monitor, as the war in Afghanistan winds down, wow, the war winds down. Interesting phraseology. The war winds down. Anyway, as that happens, U.S. military officials are considering these questions. Could IEDs be used in combination with a cyber attack? Could a cyber trigger be used to detonate a roadside bomb? Will IEDs be used on highway overpasses and such in the United States? These are the questions that the U.S. military officials are wrestling with and how to take the lessons they have learned overseas and apply them to defense of the homeland. Doesn't that sound like something out of Orwell? How to take the lessons they have learned while fighting in East Asia and apply them to defense of the homeland. Of course, if we wouldn't have gone there to begin with a massive U.S. military invasion, we might never have been exposed to IEDs or have to worry about. Oh, never mind. Lieutenant General Michael Barbaro, director of the Pentagon's Joint Improvised Explosive Device Organization. You didn't know they had one, did you? Says, quote, "It is clear the IED is the primary weapon of choice for terrorist networks and as a result is one of the enduring operational and domestic security challenges for the foreseeable future." This is a three-star general, too. "The domestic IED threat from both homegrown extremists and global threat networks is real and presents a significant security challenge for the United States." End quote. In the United States, some of these attacks that the general is talking about include the attempted underwear bomber, as well as the Times Square event in 2010. There were also ink cartridges packed with explosives aboard two separate cargo planes, which wasn't reported very much. General Barbaro told lawmakers in public testimony before the security subcommittee adjourned to a closed session for public consumption, he said, quote, "These attempts clearly demonstrate the commitment of these threat networks to continue to employ IEDs against our homeland in traditional as well as new and creative ways." Continue to employ IED. Okay. Many of these are made, of course, with calcium ammonium nitrate, which was used in the Oklahoma City bombing and killed 168 people. So, the best way, of course, in my opinion, wait a minute. Here's a comment from Representative Dan Lundgren, Republican of California, chairman of the House Subcommittee on Cybersecurity Infrastructure Protection and Security Technologies. He told the Daily Beast Online, quote, The IED is the most deadly form of attack on our troops in the war zone. The number of those attacks has increased over time. Is there any question that those who are dedicated to killing Americans would not exploit vulnerabilities in the United States to use IEDs here? Those who are dedicated to killing Americans. The only organizations that I can think of that are dedicated to killing Americans are U.S. corporations. They're dedicated to killing Americans. You find it in the products they turn out. You find it in the fraud and crime they commit against people that drives them into stress situations that has to produce suicide and cancer and heart attacks and strokes. The only operational units that I'm aware of, truth seekers, that seek to destroy and kill Americans are American corporations. Am I wrong? Somebody shoot me an email.
As a referral.
Sponsored by Diane Civic. Thanks, Diane. From Terry in Flushing, New York, regarding George the President. From Terry in Flushing, New York, regarding George the President. Mike, George Bush having the powers of the presidency for 8 years doesn't bother me as much as knowing that so many people in power and so much money with complete collaboration of the corporate media kept him there and convinced people he should be there. That's the most disturbing part of it. Terry, yeah, that's the truth. Oh, and vis-a-vis the horrible drought and the temperature and so on and so forth that we're experiencing here and pretty much globally now. This from the Associated Press, about 6:30 this evening, Eastern Time. An iceberg twice the size of Manhattan tore off one of Greenland's largest glaciers, illustrating another dramatic change to that island. For several years, scientists have been watching a long crack near the tip of the northerly Petermann Glacier. Today, NASA satellites should have broken completely, freeing an iceberg measuring 46 square miles. Well, that's pretty big. A massive ice sheet covers about four-fifths of Greenland. And the Peterman Glacier is mostly on land, but a segment sticks out over water like a frozen tongue. No longer! That's where the break occurred. Thunk! Now, 2 years ago, the same glacier cut loose an iceberg twice as big. Jesus, God. 92 square miles. So, a couple of years ago, one that as big as four times the size of Manhattan. Good God. University of Delaware professor said he was one of the first researchers to notice a break, said it's dramatic, it's disturbing. We have data for 150 years, and we see changes that we have not seen before. This professor added, it's one of the manifestations that Greenland is changing very fast. Researchers suspect global warming is to blame, but they can't prove it conclusively yet. Glaciers do calve icebergs naturally, but what's happened in the past 3 years to this particular glacier, according to scientists, is unprecedented. A NASA geologist said, quote, this is not part of natural variations anymore, end quote. An Ohio State University ice scientist said there is still a chance. There's a chance it could be just normal calving, you know, where a chunk breaks off, like losing a fingernail that has grown too long. But any further loss would show it's not natural. This professor said, quote, we're still at the phase of scratching our heads and figuring out how big a deal this really is. Well, Northern Greenland and Canada have been warming five times faster than the average global temperature. Temperatures have increased in Northern Greenland and Canada by about 4 degrees Fahrenheit in the past 30 years. And the Associated Press reports it's more than glaciers in Greenland that are melting. Scientists have also reported this week that the Arctic had the largest sea ice loss on record for June. It's a liberal plot. We liberals have the power to raise the temperature on the planet. We liberals have the power to break off icebergs four times the size of Manhattan. We liberals have the power to cause droughts and tornadoes and hurricanes and superfires. It's a liberal plot. You didn't know that? You didn't know it's a liberal plot? Well, shame on you. Of course it's a liberal plot. Jesus, God. What do you say to about this stuff? All right, how about some crazy noise? All right, let's do some crazy. I normally don't talk about the drug-addled pig man, but this is really, I mean, this shows how far this guy is out of his crawl space. He says that the final Batman movie, The Dark Knight Rises, that comes out Friday, is another Hollywood pinko plot against Republican presidential nominee Mitt Romney. Here's what he said. He said the movie's villain is a mask-wearing, gas-breathing terrorist named Bane, B-A-N-E. Bain, B-A-I-N, capital is the investment firm Romney used to make a lot of money and send people into destitution and suicide before he got into politics. So do you get it? A terrorist named Bain, B-A-N-E, and Bain Capital, B-A-I-N. So Limbaugh said today on his radio show, according to what I have here, do you think it's accidental that the name of the really vicious, fire-breathing, four-eyed, whatever it is, villain in this movie is named Bain? You think that's a coincidence? Now, Limbaugh didn't come up with this on his own. Apparently, the Washington Times and the Washington Examiner, both right-wing neo-fascist newspapers, reported that Democrats and liberal bloggers were the first to make the Bain connection and suggest using it against Romney. But now conservatives, led by the drug-addled pig man with his trillions of listeners, are talking about this alleged link. And as Huffington Post, as they write, meanwhile, it's all free promotion for the movie. So far, no formal response from the studio or director Christopher Nolan, and why would they? But the comic book writer Chuck Dixon, who co-created the Bain character in the early 1990s, before Romney got into politics, responded on his message board. Well, let's just say he responded ridiculous. So there you have it. According to the drug-addled pig man, I wonder how much longer before Limbaugh overdoses permanently. I wonder.
Into that good night. Rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Email from Bill in Allentown. Bill is listener number 25, by the way. He writes, Mike, you were right in 2008. We should have elected McCain Palin. The teabaggers would be screaming for socialism with those two in office today, but we went Democratic, and in 2011, the Republicans put a stop to anything because there's a black man in the White House. If McCain were in the White House today, we'd be in a few more Lindsey Graham wars and Lieberman wars because we need to protect Israel from those rock-throwing Palestinians. Sorry for yelling, but that's what I'd see happening. Especially with a VP Palin, who can see Russia from her house. God, what a dumb piece of human waste. Bill in Allentown, PA, listener number 25. You know, we were talking just last night about no matter how big the financial scandals get, they just follow one on after another, just like standing on the beach down in Jacksonville in Florida and watching the way the breakers come in, you know, shoom, just one after another. Now it's the global bank HSBC. It has been laundering drug money, and it has been laundering Saudi, what does it say here? The global bank HSBC has been used by Mexican drug cartels looking to get cash back into the U.S. by Saudi Arabian banks that needed access to dollars despite their terrorist ties, and by Iranians who wanted to circumvent the United States sanctions. This is according to a report from the glorious United States Senate. A 335-page report released yesterday also says that executives at HSBC and regulators at the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency decided to ignore all the information that pointed to this kind of activity and failed to stop the illegal behavior at many points between 2001 and 2010. In one case, an HSBC executive successfully argued that the bank, this according to the New York Times, that the bank should resume business with the Saudi Arabian bank, Al Rajhi Bank, despite the fact that Al Rajhi's founder had been an early benefactor, I love that word, of Al-Qaeda. HSBC's American branch ended up supplying $1 billion to the bank. See, you know this. I mean, you understand all this. I'm just quoting from the newspaper here. But the American banking system, the American financial system, these sons of bitches don't care where the money comes from. It can be saturated with the blood of American soldiers. It doesn't matter. It can be saturated with the blood of Mexican civilians who have had their heads lopped off because they got in the way of the drug cartels. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. An American bank, a global bank that has its tentacles in this country, and I'm referring to every bank. This case is it's this bank, this HSBC, but all of the banks, it doesn't matter who they are, all the American banks, they don't care where the money comes from. They don't care what it supports. They don't care what it's about. Just give me my cut. This is what capitalism does. If it's money that's being used to overthrow the system of government, of what am I saying, in this country, they don't care. If it's money used to slaughter civilians in some godforsaken country in Africa, they don't care. If it's used to suppress human rights in one of the states of India, the human rights of minority religion, they don't care. They don't give a goddamn. Are you kidding me? This is the way it is. This is the way it should be, right? I mean, there's no point in sitting here whining about it or complaining about it. This is the nature of international banking. They don't give a damn about anything. Give me the money. Is it full of the blood of baby corpses? Well, you know, you win a few, you lose a few. Is it full of the blood of American soldiers? Well, they should have got out of the way of those IEDs. Oh, that's a knee slapper, isn't it? It just keeps coming, and it's never going to change until the banks are completely taken over by the people and in their present form, utterly deep-sixed and changed. You are not going to reform them. Pass all the laws you want to pass with this corrupt body of lawmakers we have that are owned by the banking industry. It'll never change. It cannot change. It has to be replaced. But like I said, you know that.
gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Diane Civic. Thank you, Diane. Okay, just briefly back to the Global Bank at HSBC with many branches in this country. It's been used by Mexican drug cartels, terrorist organizations. But so what? This is a report that is a product of a year-long investigation, apparently, according to the New York Times, by a Senate subcommittee. That is the Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations. It points to the problems that HSBC, Europe's largest financial institution, as indicators of a broader problem of illegal money flowing through international financial institutions into this country. Senator Carl Levin, the Michigan Democrat who leads the subcommittee, said, quote, banks that ignore money laundering rules are a big problem for our country. Ooh, really? Really? Is that the truth, Carl? He says, also troubling is a bank regulator that does not adequately do its job. Really? I wonder how much money Carl Levin in his career has gotten from the banking industry to make sure he gets reelected for the 46th goddamn time. How long has he been in the Senate, Carl Levin? Isn't this guy about 112 years old? He called HSBC's compliance culture, quote, pervasively polluted for a long time. Now, that's cool. Pervasively polluted for a long time. What is that? That's longer than a year? Greater than 10 years? What's a long time, Carl? I guess when you're 112 years old, it's could be any length of time, right? Oh, anyway, Levin said yesterday that HSBC had promised, pinky promised, to fix similar problems in years past and failed. Oh, the problems were just so big. We just couldn't fix them. We just had to keep taking drug money. We had to keep financing terror organizations. We had to keep... Levin said, quote, while the bank is saying all the right things, and that is fine, it has said all the right things before. What the hell kind of weasel words are those? Come on, Carl. Why don't you man up and bring these guys into a Senate hearing and have the sergeant-at-arms arrest the bastards and throw them in jail? Charge them with terror. Send them to Guantanamo. What's wrong with you, Carl? Come on. Weasel words. And according to the Times, this hearing is unlikely to be the end of HSBC's problems. The bank has disclosed in regulatory filings that the issues with money laundering are also being investigated by the Department of Justice and could lead to criminal charges and, quote, significant, end quote, fines, which analysts have said could reach $1 billion. $1 billion? Lunch money. Come on. $1 billion. Put them in prison. Torture them, Carl. Send them to Gitmo. Subject them to simulated drowning. Ask for names and places. Get them to confess that they were involved in the blowing up of the World Trade Center. They'll do it, Carl. Pour water down their mouths and noses. Come on. A fine? It's always a fine. The fines are fine. It's the cost of doing business, Carl. You see, this report is the latest of all these scandals that, I guess, highlights the inability of regulators to catch, listen to this sentence. Listen to this. This is in the Times. I want you to listen to this. The report on HSBC is the latest of several scandals that have recently rocked global banks and highlighted the inability of regulators to catch what is claimed to be widespread wrongdoing in the financial industry. Claimed to be? Who wrote this? Nathaniel Popper. He goes on to write, the British bank Barclays recently admitted that its traders tried to manipulate a crucial global interest rate. And multiple major banks are under investigation. JP Morgan Chase disclosed last week that its employees may have tried to hide trades that are likely to cost the bank billions of dollars. See, it's not going to stop. You do understand that, don't you, truth seeker? It is simply not going to stop. It doesn't make any difference how many subcommittee investigates this, or full committee or permanent committee investigates that, or, you know, who stands up in the House or the Senate and says, this is terrible. None of this matters. This is the theater part of it. This is the part where the members of Congress, senators and representatives, agree before the crime is ever committed. They sit down with the banking people and they say, look, okay, you make sure I get reelected for the next four sessions, and I'll cover your ass so well that you won't be able to find it. But I may have to occasionally stand up in the well of the Senate or the House and you know, froth and foam at the mouth about this corrupt industry. But don't let that bother you, because that is just so common. And besides, the networks don't cover it because nobody cares about the banking or financial services industries because they're so difficult to understand. I mean, go ahead, ask the average American what a derivative is. Excuse me. So anyway, the representatives and the senators sit down with their owners, and the owners say, okay, that sounds like a pretty good deal. We'll back your candidacy. Here's $1 million to get you elected. Here's $2 million to get you reelected. We'll dig up some trash on your opponent. We'll find out that maybe, we'll make it up. We'll just say he had sex with his mother when he was 16. Let him deny it. So don't worry about anything, okay? You all set? And the senators and the representatives just wink and nod and, you know, go have a $3,000 lunch and explain to their owners. Just don't forget that part where occasionally I have to have a subcommittee write a 300-page paper investigating you. And it's just a joke. Don't take it seriously. But I have to do this, okay, to continue to fool the American public and especially my constituents into believing that I'm doing something. You get that, don't you? Yes, we get that, Mr. Senator. Yes, we get that, Ms. Representative. It's okay. Now, let's get about the business of doing business. Huh? You don't believe that happens? You serious? You really don't. You believe it's all in the up and up. You believe that the senators and the representatives are elected to clean up the corruption in the financial services industry. We are going to, if we just clean this up, we'll never have to tax anybody again. We could even remove sales tax on baby food. All we have to do is clean up this, elect me, and I'll see that it's cleaned up. And, you know, the committee to elect this schmuck is peppered with people from the financial services industry, and they sit back and they say, hey, damn, he almost sounds serious. No, he's not serious. He just has to say that. Oh, okay. So, does anyone out there, let me see a show of hands, anyone out there believe that the House or the Senate that is dependent on the financial services industry, like the military-industrial complex, the pharmaceutical-industrial complex, the insurance, the murderous insurance, all these corporations, all these capitalist enterprises. Does anyone out there, show me some hands, really believe that the people dependent upon this money for their livelihoods, for their jobs, are going to do something to stop the corruption? Do you really think that? No. Do I see any hands? No, not a single hand. All right. So what do we do? If the system is non-reformable, and if we cannot reach those people who say they represent us, what do you do? What do you do? Well, the first thing you do is put 10 million people in the streets, or 20 million, and let the corporatists know that the jig is up, that it's time to get serious. Because if they don't, we are going to do something nasty. And once we have their attention, then we change the system. We eliminate this corruption by eliminating the spawning ground for the corruption. What's the spawning ground? Why, you're absolutely right. Capitalism! Hey, way to go, troops.
Go straight to hell as fast as I can. I'd rather be a puzzle than a pool I made. Back my soul, bet it all on just one roll. See a pair of snake eyes looking cold. When you lose, it's only fair.
With Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Diane Civic. Diane Civic. Thanks, Diane. I appreciate it very much. Will Pitt has a piece out at BuzzFlash and Truth Out, and he writes about how was from Talking Points memo. Here's the quote: Senator John McCain defended Mitt Romney from Democratic speculation that he passed on him as a 2008 running mate after reviewing his tax returns. Not true, said McCain. He said that Sarah Palin was simply the better choice. Jesus God. McCain called the tax claims outrageous and disgraceful in an interview with Politico today. He said he chose Palin, quote, because we thought that Sarah Palin was the better candidate, end quote. So, yeah, that happened, right? What is Will Wright? He says, in an attempt to deflect speculation that McCain passed on Romney as his VP pick because of Romney's murky financials, McCain set the bar so low that a flatworm would have difficulty wriggling under the gap. We did not go with Romney because Palin was the better candidate. Oh, God. And Will writes, regardless of anything else, Mitt Romney's presidential campaign now has a new rotting bird swinging pendulously from his neck. Oh, the last GOP presidential nominee just announced to the world that the present GOP nominee is not as good a candidate as Sarah Palin. Turn out the lights when you leave. Jesus Christ. Oh, that's good, Will. Sarah Palin was a better candidate than Romney. I'll tell you, I just love... Have you seen... I think it started with the governor of Alabama. He's a weird-looking dude. He looks like a denuded turkey. He really does, this governor of Alabama, but he's the latest, or the first, I think he was the first Republican to step out and say, well, now, Mitt Romney, you should release your tax returns. Of course, if you're the governor of Alabama, you are about as interested in seeing a Mormon as president as you are in seeing Satan as president. They're about the same. They're interchangeable. I mean, you can bet your bottom dollar the governor of Alabama is a hardcore, hard-shell Baptist. And, you know, probably from one of those Baptist churches, not where they have snake handling, that's so mountain. He's probably from one of those Baptist churches where they flail themselves, you know, they take switches and beat themselves across the back and the legs and so on and so forth. Now those are some Baptists. I mean, anybody can handle snakes. You know, you might die, but anyone can handle snakes. But, you know, to stand up in front of your congregation and just wail the hell out of yourself with a birch switch, you know, whew. God. So the governor of Alabama says Mitt ought to come clean. And what, Rick Perry, you remember him, right? Well, there's three cabinet posts out abolished when I'm president. Let's see, the Division of Motor Vehicles. I can't think of the other two. Perry came out, didn't he, today and say, well, somebody wants to be president, they ought to release as many tax returns as they can. Oh, my God. So here's Mitt Romney. You know he's not going to be president. You know he's not. The Wall Street folks, you know, these corrupt sons of bitches, they've had a great run with Obama. Now, granted, they're afraid that if he is reelected, now the hammer is going to come down. But they would rather have Obama with a proven record than Mitt. Mitt is just too weird. There's no telling what Mitt might do. Mitt used to be a liberal. Mitt was a goddamn liberal. He really was. He was all for a woman's right to privacy when she made decisions about her uterus in the presence of her doctor. And he was in favor of that. Yeah, I think women and their uteruses ought to be in pretty close contact. I really do. I don't think government ought to step in and, you know, stop a woman from having a decent conversation with her own uterus, and a private one of that. I mean, that was Mitt. See, the Republican, the teabaggers, they hate that. But the fact that he's a Mormon, that's the thing, see? You know, they're afraid he's going to get all wobbly and, you know, just walk out the White House one day, start digging in the Rose Garden and say, look! Gold tablets! Look! They don't want that. So they're going to... I think the moneyed folks are going to stick with the horse that they can trust. They don't have to worry about Eric Holder. Holder's going to be gone anyway. Hillary's probably going to be gone. So, you know, it's going to be a smooth ride for these people as they destroy the country and the planet, too, by the way. All right, we're going to open the phone lines during this break. And if you want to chat, the phone number here is 877-996-2556. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. is sponsored by Diana in Florida. Ah! There we go. Thanks, Diana. One of our longest-term listeners to this program. I think Diana goes all the way back to IE America days. Ah! Diana has a message. Where in the world did anyone get the idea that a businessman would make a good president? The purpose of a business is to make a handful of people at the top very wealthy at the expense of everyone else. The government is a non-profit organization intended to serve the needs of the people. Its leader needs to be a public servant, preferably someone who has spent his or her life in public service, not corporate headquarters. We've had enough corporatocracy. It's time for some democratic socialism. Yes, Diana in Florida. Thank you, Diana, for the message and for the sponsorship. I honestly believe, I honestly believe that anyone who is seriously considering or even half seriously considering the salvation of this nation will consider democratic socialism. Anything else is bull hockey. It's just not going to work. And you don't need to be a weatherman to know which way the wind is blowing, as somebody said. You don't need to be an economics or a political genius or a political scientist to understand that American capitalism, actually global capitalism, but especially American capitalism, has had its run. It's over. The only thing that can happen further on this capitalist road is further destruction. Hello? Prove me wrong. Show me something that is a glimmer of hope that capitalism is going to drop its predatory nature. It's going to stop devouring babies and veterans and the bush and trees and mountaintops and oceans and coral reefs. Show me something. I am so open to seeing it. Anything that would indicate to you, dear heart, that capitalism is going to change its mind and stop being the global murderer. Anything, anything. Hello? No, nobody out? Can't? It doesn't? Okay. Okay. Just thought I would toss that out. Mike is in Santa Fe, listening on KTRC. Hello, Mike.
Hey, Mike. Been a long time listener, and I think you correctly identified the problem. You know, I mean, talking about capitalism, but I think it goes even deeper than that, and it is global. It's not just us, but I think the whole planet is just turning into this industrial disaster. I mean, it's our production, our capacity to produce stuff, digging it out of the ground and burning coal, oil, and nuclear, whatever. We produce so much stuff, and we have to produce more next year in order for the world economy to keep operating. And I mean, it's already an industrial disaster, and you know, a military industrial disaster that has the biggest carbon footprint, makes the most garbage, and then just makes garbage out of everything by blowing it up.
You know, I've heard this statistic many times, and I just heard it, I think, again today. And I think for the first time, it really just ground into my brain like some kind of a parasite when I heard this today. 70% of the gross domestic product of this country is produced by consumers buying things. I mean, you stop and think about that. 70% of all the goods and services are the result of people buying things. Now, that may be self-evident just by the definition of gross domestic product, but for some reason, that burrowed into my brain today, like, okay, so does that mean that if everybody stopped buying things for one day, one week, that 70% of the economy would take notice? And I don't have any answers, but there's something about that statistic that is just crazy to me.
I mean, I just don't buy anything anymore. I mean, you know, I've never been able to buy much, and now I don't make that much money to buy anything. I mean, I've really gotten to the point where I don't want to be a homeless person. I still run my electricity, you know, and I know I'm burning coal here in New Mexico. But I think you also correctly identify that, you know, the only thing we can do is stop the gears of the machine. I mean, just we have to stop.
That's the only thing that makes any sense to me, because, like I've said many times, even if you're an advocate of violence, which I'm not, you're not going to defeat the military industrial complex in this country with a head-on confrontation. On this side, you have the pissed off citizens with their toy guns, and over on this side, you have the United States military with every weapon imaginable, and some that you can't imagine, don't even know about. This is what always just made me laugh my ass off about groups like the Michigan Militia or these freaks here in Georgia that run around in the North Georgia Mountains in their camo outfits. Like, what? You're going to take, you know, one platoon of Marines would wipe out the whole goddamn militia movement in this country, and it would only take them about 2 hours. So crazy to think about a violent overthrow. What is necessary is what we've talked about, what you just said. Stop the machine. That's
stop
it.
Stop the machine. That's all we can do. I mean, in New Mexico here, we live in this is a really heavily military industrial state. Not only do we, you know, build the first atom bomb and blow the first one up here, but I mean, you know, most of us living in Santa Fe, you know, we have sort of a cute little content culture here.
Mm-hmm.
But it's detached from reality somehow. I mean, if it weren't for oil, gas, you know, copper and mining and especially the military industrial complex, there wouldn't be an economy in this state.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there'd be some pueblos up here, you know, where the, you know, the natives have lived for thousands of years, but there's just not that much here.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, I can go to the store, and I mean, I can go buy sushi, you know, import it from, we're up at 7,000 feet in the middle of the desert, in the middle of nowhere, and we consume like crazy up here. I can get anything I want just in Santa Fe, go buy it, and right. You know, right. I'll have it right now.
I hear you.
I'm planning on getting out of here, actually, but I don't know, you know, but where do you go? It's, you know.
All right. Well, listen, good points, Mike. I appreciate what you have to say, and, you know, I share this obvious frustration. I mean, you and I and you know, another 100 million of us, we don't want blood in the streets. We really don't. We don't want violent overthrow. We don't want fixed bayonets and, you know, patrols manning every street corner with live ammunition. We don't want that. But I think what we do want is to see an end to this madness and just once, maybe in our lifetimes, replace it with something that is sane. That's I think that's all I'm asking for. Mike, I got to move on. Thank you, sir. I appreciate you checking in. That's all. Just temporary sanity. You know, just something to be able to say, look, you know, we didn't have to go up to the edge of the abyss. We did, but at least we didn't pitch over or something like that.
As our average worker drones, we work just as hard, and we too sometimes need to paint our homes. The pressures are incredible, and no one seems to care.
Haiti, and now we have to move from there.
You're not this angry, then you're not paying attention. Back to Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Ramona is in Camden, Indiana. Is that right?
Hammond, yes.
Hammond, Indiana. Hi, Ramona.
Hi, how you doing?
Pretty good.
It's been a long, long time, Mike.
What has?
Since I called you.
Okay. Well, where have you been?
Oh, just life got in the way.
I hear that, yeah.
Yeah, my granddaughter Ashley and I used to call her daddy. My son spent two tours in Iraq.
Hmm.
And we used to call your show, and you said to me once what you said earlier today, I mean tonight, about the only soldier they like is a dead soldier.
Mm-hmm.
And you said those words to me, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just wanted to update you. My son has been unemployed since he got out of the service. He suffers from PTSD.
How long was he in the military, Ramona?
He spent two tours
In Iraq?
Yes.
And was he physically wounded?
No.
Just psychologically and emotionally?
Yes, and he has not been able to hold down a job, and ironically, he's back to what he was doing before he went into service, working at a pizza place.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been really tough.
What, has he applied for any sort of assistance of any kind, not just health, but also educational or anything from the Veterans Administration?
No, he hasn't. I've been trying to get him to go because he's entitled to, compensation for his injury. It is an injury.
Sure.
But he refuses to go. He doesn't want to go through all that.
I can understand that. Is he in active reserve now?
No, he's out of service.
He's completely finished.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. What,
yeah.
You're his mom. What do you see as a path, a possible path that your son is going to take here? Have you given that any thought?
Well, he was hired in one company working on computers, which he was trained to do in the service.
Mm-hmm.
And then once they had their website up and running and everything was fine, they let him go.
Yeah.
So I don't know what he said he's going to stick with the pizza place. Says it keeps food on the table.
Does he talk about his experiences in Iraq?
He does from time to time. Things will come out. I mean, the latest thing that came out, we were on the porch and him and his wife were having marital problems. And he started off talking about their marital problems, and then he got quiet and I saw him tearing up. And then he started talking about when they were ambushed in Iraq, and he had to, literally save some of his people in his unit. And he just broke down and cried, and he just cried on my shoulder. I mean, I was holding him like a little baby, rocking him in the swing. We have a porch swing, and I was rocking him. And he was crying, and he was saying, "Mom, they were just kids," he said. "They were just kids." And he said, "I couldn't save all of them. I couldn't save all of them." And I said, "Jay, you did what you could."
Right.
But that was an eye-opener. I mean, he was just crying. And he went in the house. He told my husband, "She's good," because he was able to get that out. But he does talk about it every now and then, here and there. But I don't ask him. Mm-hmm. I just let him volunteer.
Yeah, it's my understanding that's the way to do it. How, is his wife able to tolerate the obvious mood swings that he's going through?
Yeah, it's difficult for her because he wakes up in sweats and has nightmares and hollers out in his sleep, but, I mean, she does say he's very moody and it's difficult to be around a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
And I rarely even speak to him. I mean, he isolates himself. The only time I even speak to him is when I call him. He does not call me at all.
Mm. Is his father living?
No, he's deceased.
Mm. I do remember you, Ramona. I remember talking with you about your son.
Yeah, and Ashley, my granddaughter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she was 11 at the time.
Now, how's she doing?
She's doing well. She's an honor student, been an honor student all the way through school.
Mm-hmm.
She's going to spend the last couple of years in high school. She's going to spend in college.
Good for her.
Yeah, she's really, really a bright kid.
Good for her. Well, Ramona, there's a break coming here. I wish you'd call a little bit more often because, you know, just updates, kiddo, you know, to know how your family's doing, okay?
Okay, I'll do that. Thank you.
All right, Ramona, take care.
Okay, you too. Thanks.
I stick my head in the sand. Sometimes I'm grand, but all of this silence is killing me. Silence is failing me. No, no, don't do that. Oh, don't do that. It takes a lifetime to learn what's been lost. Why are we all fighting? Oh, why do we keep on lighting these fires, these bombs? We don't know what's gone wrong, forgetting where we've come from, and all of this we're in trouble.
Defining anger management. Back to Mike Malloy.
I'm gonna leave the city. Got to get away. I'm gonna leave the city. Got to get away. All this fussing and fighting, man, you know I sure.
25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Diana in Florida. And her message is, where in the world did anyone get the idea that a businessman would make a good president? The purpose of a business is to make a handful of people at the top very wealthy at the expense of everyone else. The government is a non-profit organization intended to serve the needs of the people. Its leader needs to be a public servant, preferably someone who has spent his or her life in public service, not corporate headquarters. We've had enough corporatocracy. It's time for some democratic socialism. Diana in Florida. Thanks, Diana. You know, it seems to me back when George W. Bush was running and this sick, disgusting, perverted media we have kept touting him as the answer to all of our problems because he would run the country like a business. Because he was such an astute business person to begin with. And I remember Diana, I think it was Diana in Florida, she and I having the same discussion, probably via email. The same thing. Where did we come up with the idea that a businessman should run a nation of 330 million people and be involved in foreign affairs, domestic affairs, global meltdown, financial problems, environmental disaster, a businessman? I mean, that would be the last person, if you were sane, that you would vote for. A business person? Why? I mean, why? Hello? Yeah, let's have another capitalist. That'll work. It has worked. It has worked so well in the past. God. Mark is in El Paso. Hello, Mark.
Hey, Mike. How are we doing tonight?
Fine. How are you?
Good, good. good, sir. I'm going to go out on a limb here. Now, this has been discussed on the program before. What is still wrong with socialism? Because it rhymes with communism. That's what you'll hear. But I don't see anything really wrong with, like we've talked about before, democratic socialism.
Democratic socialism is the clear answer to the management of a nation of 330 million people who, for some reason, think that there's an endless supply of air, an endless supply of water, an endless supply of dirt to plant your food in. And a capitalist will continue to let people believe that while the capitalist strangles the people that he's allowing to believe that. Democratic socialism acknowledges the fact, the obvious fact, that everybody has a stake, an equal stake, in what happens on this planet or in the society or in some country in Africa or South Asia or South America. We all have a stake in everything that happens everywhere. Individualism is an illusion. You can be an individual by running the Peachtree Road Race. You know, go win it. You can be an individual by developing an iPad. Go ahead, develop it. But we are not individuals any more than little bacterium are individuals. They're not. They're part of an entire organism, and that's what we are. We're bacteria. What? We're all part of one living organism, and oh, never mind. I don't know where that was going, Mark. Never mind. It's late.
Yes, it is. But it's so true. If these people, there's nothing wrong with making a product or offering a service and selling it at a profit. But what's happened now is it's just gotten completely out of control.
I'm beginning to even believe that money, a better system is a moneyless system, that based I go back to the Jeffersonian idea. I'm sorry, I realize we don't live there anymore. We're 330 million of us. But the idea of mercantilism, the idea of products and services that are exchanged for other products and services, why not? Even the Bible says that the misuse of money is the root of all evil, or the lust for money is the root of all evil. It doesn't say money is the root of all evil. It says something about money is the root of all evil. And I think, we have gotten so far beyond the point where money is just a medium of exchange. It's become something else. And it's horrifying. So, you know, democratic socialism first, and then a moneyless society second. And stick with me long enough, and I'll have you living in caves. The love of money is the root of all evil. That's what it is.
I believe it's something like that.
Yeah, I think so.
But this predatory, and what they do is they keep people just, you watch that little box in their living room every night,
yeah.
And they just keep them focused on that, and they'll just control, and it's going to take people like yourself to open people's eyes, and unfortunately not everybody listens, you know, but they really should.
I I'm just a seeker just like you are, and I mean I can recognize the train wreck. I may not be able to to tell myself or anyone else how to have avoided the train wreck to begin with, but I can damn sure recognize one once it happens. And if we keep running the same train on the same track, and we keep repeating, kind of like that movie Groundhog Day, just keep repeating the same thing over and over and over again, it's just going to be train wreck after train wreck after train wreck. You know that, I don't know if it's a truism or not, but one sign of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. How much longer are we going to keep doing this?
I know. Do you think this is a total economic collapse? Do you think that's what it will take?
It may. I hate to envision what total economic collapse would look like in a country where 70% of everything depends on consumer buying. Consumer spending, I shudder to think what that would look like, but that may be part of the great die-off that the 1% is hoping for to begin with. You know, they want about 6 or 7 billion of us to just get the hell off their planet.
Exactly.
So, all right, well, listen, Mark, I got to move on. Thank you, sir. I appreciate you checking in, okay?
Okay, Mike, you have
all
a good night.
All right, you too. Take care. Yo. Steven is in Burbank, listening on Sirius. Hello, Steven.
Hi, Mike. It's always great to be in conversation with one of my top 10 favorite luminaries.
Oh, yeah?
And Debbie wanted me to call in, and so that was the motivation.
Yeah.
And it was the serendipitous that I have something that is not too profound and deep. And it concerns John McCain and Mitt Romney. It seems that John McCain has Mitt Romney's tax records or something like that.
Yeah.
He has something that the American people wants. And if he's a maverick and if he's all good and nice and all that, well, hey.
Well, now, wait. How did John McCain get Mitt Romney's tax returns?
I don't know. the gist has it that Barbara told me that the 2008 election, you know, that McCain wanted Romney's tax returns as, to check him out as a running mate. And somehow he got a hold of them, that he has them. Now, I don't know if this is true, really. I don't know if this is true.
Well, the way what's being reported is that McCain gave an interview to one of the online publications, was it Daily Beast, and he said that there is a rumor out there that in the 2008 selection for that you know, his people made for him, they had considered Romney and then dropped Romney for Palin because Palin was better qualified. And that the story that it had to do with Romney's tax returns, John McCain now says, is not true. He said it was because, frankly, Sarah Palin would have made a better candidate. Now, I would rather have someone say that they looked at my tax returns and decided to drop me rather than saying Sarah Palin would be a better candidate than me. You get that?
More or less. I mean, if, you know, Hillary is of the female gender, and so here we have Sarah Palin as the counterpoint, you know.
But I don't think Hillary ever said, you know, I can I understand Russia, I can see it from my back porch. You
know? I think these politicians have the American people pegged too well.
Oh, God.
Your previous caller is talking about individuals, you know, and I agree with you. And what I see in society are the people with, like, all the body piercings and the tattoos and the weird hair and all that. And it's like, how come they're not happy with themselves? How come they have to change themselves into something else? And we could look at that, and we could call it the individualism cult, mm-hmm. You know, that they're just sort of like modified zombies, more or less. But there are individualists, you know, people like Bob Dylan, you know, people like John Lennon, Bukowski, Charles Bukowski, mm-hmm. You know, Kafka, Dostoevsky. These guys were individualists, but they told us the truth. They shared their perspectives with the societies, with the world, mm-hmm. You know, and we gain insight, perspective from that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, when we come to, like, trying to define humanity being herd animals or humanity wanting to be free, there are going to have to be some very important dichotomies to be dissected, you know, to try to get the people to understand that, you know what, let's take Elvis Costello's advice. You don't really need it. You don't really need states all over the world, you know. Versace and Prada.
The hour. This hour has been sponsored by Diana in Florida. And Diana makes a very rational point. Where in the world did anyone get the idea that a businessman would make a good president? The purpose of a business is to make a handful of people at the top very wealthy at the expense of everyone else. The government, on the other hand, is a nonprofit organization intended to serve the needs of the people. Its leader needs to be a public servant, preferably someone who has spent their life in public service, not corporate headquarters. We've had enough corporatocracy. It's time for some democratic socialism. Diana in Florida. Thank you, Diana. All right, Stephen, I got run over by a commercial.
That's okay, boss.
Where were you?
More proof that capitalism destroys the individual.
There you go.
And I could yakety-yak on for another 20 minutes, but, boss, maybe you have some better calls. I don't know.
Well, we'll soon find out.
Any questions?
No questions.
Oh, good.
I took the notes. All I can say is I haven't read Charles Bukowski in 20 years, and I need to go back and read him. But it's best to read Bukowski when you're drunk on your ass. You know that as well as I do, because everything he wrote when he was drunk on his ass. So.
Yeah, well, I finished reading The True Believer by Eric Hoffer.
Did you?
Well, you recommended me to me. Boy, does he ever have my act nailed.
Doesn't he? Doesn't he?
Yeah. Oh, he's got me figured out one side down the other.
Yeah.
But I do disagree with some of the stuff he said. So,
well, you have to remember when he wrote it. He wrote that in 52, I think.
51 it was published.
51. 50, and, yeah.
And I can't say that he's ripping my act from before I was born.
Well, he certainly knew how to articulate, you know, for supposedly a longshoreman with no real formal education, which I tend to question, he certainly knew how to use language.
For sure.
And he had great insight. He understood the true believer. And you know, he came at a time when all this anti-communist horse crap was starting to surface in this country. And I think, you know, obviously the true believers he was talking about were the people who were in lockstep, whether they were anti-communists or pro-capitalist or whatever they were. It was very easy to spot. And I think Hoffer was, he put it in language. I know I read that when I was a teenager, and he certainly put it in language that I could understand.
In terms we can understand.
Yep.
Just like Adam Curtis.
Who?
Oh, never mind. We can get to that later, maybe.
Thanks, Stephen.
Okay, bye.
All right, take care. Yeah, if you have not read The True Believer yet, Eric Hoffer's book that was written in the early 50s, Stephen said it was published in 51, so it might have been written in the late 40s. I'll tell you another one you want to read that's a little bit more polemical, a little bit more screaming. If you listen to this program, you would probably like... Well, like might be the wrong word. Philip Wiley's book, Generation of Vipers, which is a great title. It's right out of the Bible, Generation of Vipers. But read that one. That was written in the 40s. Generation of Vipers. Danny is in Mill Valley, California. Hello, Danny.
Mike Malloy, me boy. Thanks for your patriotism.
Okay.
In the interest of national security, Mike, it's urgent matter because you can't leave national security to chance. The authorities really have to round up all the neocons and take them to detention camps. Because obviously, Mike, it's the patriotic thing to do. But also, it's merciful because just imagine if one day the conservatives found out that they were double-crossed by the neocon.
Yeah.
Imagine, it'd be crazy. The neocons, you know, they don't worry about the liberals because they think the liberals will just sit back and do nothing. But when the conservatives find out about the treasonous neocon to destroy America, they would freak out. The conservatives will be hanging the neocons in the streets.
But they won't be able to do that if they're in detention camps.
No, so. That's what I'm saying. That's why if we don't do that, it'll be ugly. They'll be hanging them in the streets.
Well, ugly can be beautiful. I mean, you know, I'm kind of just philosophically opposed to detention camps, and going along with what you're suggesting about the conservatives will attack the neocons with great fury and force. I'm all for that. I'm all for that. So let's leave him out on the street, because you're right. At some point, Danny, that's how, I don't know. But the conservatives, the little right-wing twerps in this country who are so eager to get to just fall in and goose step behind these crazy people like Beck and Limbaugh and the right-wing politicians, at some point, enough of them are going to come out of the ether just long enough to take a look around and see their lives are slowly being destroyed by the very powers that they back every 2 or 4 years. And then there will be a mighty uproar. And I want to see the uproar. I want to see the Republicans being eaten alive by the teabaggers, who in turn will be eaten alive by the right wingers, who in turn will be eaten. You see how that goes. It's kind of like the snake swallowing its own tail. I want to see that.
Yeah, I just think in that chaos, too many innocent Americans would be killed. So I want to protect the prisoners and give them a fair trial. I know conservatives will criticize me for being lenient on traitors, but actually, I mean, we don't even know that the neocons are human. I mean, they have no conscience, no sense of morality. They act like exterminator drones from outer space. I mean, we haven't even seen their birth certificates.
I hear that. Danny, there's the music, which means I have to go. Thanks a lot for checking in, pal. Take care. I'll see you tomorrow night. It's my understanding that maybe before this week is out, we will have another Mike Malloy Radio Gumshoe episode. When? I don't know. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.